Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office, and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, coming to you from the ground zero of the global warming catastrophe. It is the snow that's up to my neck as we speak. It's cold out here. It's cold in here. It's cold everywhere. Woo! It's that doggone global warming getting us down. It's all right, though, because we're going to discover some things today, hopefully about science that might make it warm for everybody eventually. Ha! Yeah, well, some people don't necessarily want it warm, but we can use our physics and our mad science to make it cool when it's needed to be cool, and so on and so forth. But before I get started with the show today, which I want to talk about our magnets, proof of free energy, There could very well be something to that. So we'll get into that. But before I get into that show, I want to put a shout out to People for People Radio Network and tell you, go over and visit them. If you're in the www.shazizradio.com superchat.html, then you'll find there's four separate chat rooms in there. But if you scroll down underneath the chat room, you will find a People for People radio link. Go over and say hi to those wonderful people over there. Plus, today is going to be a long day for me. It's going to be a pretty cool day, I guess, because, well, yeah, it's global warming out there. But besides all that, we've got a couple new radio shows. One not so new, but one new anyway. We're going to be doing here on Shaziz Radio and People for People Radio. We're going to be doing Kara Music with Kara Hour. So whenever you get done listening to Mad Science, if you like music, she got to share some music with you in a pretty cool way. So with that said, as after that show's over, we're going to also have another show, which is a comeback of the Hope Show. For those of you who's been around Shaziz Radio for a long time, there used to be a really good radio show on, I don't remember if it was Saturday or Sunday. I have to look on the schedule. Either way, but there's still links up there to the Hope podcast. So if you ever want to go listen into some of her shows from the past, my lovely wife Beverly is going to be doing a shorter version of the Hope Show today, where she shares insight and her spiritual journey. If you're into faith-based type of radio shows, and this is the show for you. And even if you're not, maybe you might want to listen in. Might be able to benefit some way or somehow just by listening. So with that said, we got a couple extra shows coming up after the Mad Science Show. So now let's get into the Mad Science Show. I'm going to play a couple things that are kind of high-tech, I guess, terminology. And if you've listened to me for a long time, you understand I despise high-tech terminology. I don't like high-tech terminology because it confuses the simple. And the simple of it is there's a lot more going on in this world, and if you pay really close attention to nature and you look at the mechanics of how nature actually functions, you learn a lot of beneficial things, things that can do things for you. For example, whenever there was a day whenever they only had boats in the world, and you get on this boat, and you're sitting there and you're floating, that was pretty cool. But up until they designed the oar so that you could move the water underneath the boat was just kind of at the mercy of whatever was going on, just kind of floating around there, bobbing and weaving or whatever, like a little bobber out there in the lake when you're fishing or whatever. But nonetheless, they figured out, we put these paddles out there, we can paddle this doggone boat and go places, right? Well, after a while, that got a little bit tiring. So they got to figure out some way where we can turn, something around us into some sort of useful purpose so that we don't have to paddle anymore. And guess what? They figured out how to put a sail on that boat. And the next thing you know, they were going longer distance. Didn't have to work so hard in order to get from point A to point B. That's just by paying attention to what was going on in nature, Maybe one of those sailors was over there paddling, and he says, look at that leaf over there blowing past us. It's being pushed by the wind. What if we threw something up there like that leaf and made a, so it'd capture that wind? And so they did. And then we had sailing ships, and from that point on, sailing ships had their pros and cons, but the doggone thing is they figured out other ways in order to be able to, turn machinery and stuff into more power to push these things around. So now we got big old Navy ships and such, cruise ships. So, that's the way it all is. So if you actually pay attention to what's going on in nature, then there are things mechanically going on in nature that just might surprise you. When you think about magnetism and you think about electricity, you've been listening to science for a long time, you understand if you pass a magnet back and forth across this wire that it will actually produce electrical current. And vice versa, if you pass a current through the wire, well then you end up getting magnetism out of the deal, aka electromagnets. So the question are magnets proof of free energy? Because if you actually sit down and contemplate on what's actually going on in a magnet in a subatomic scale, there's something happening there because it produces a strong invisible field of force, or whatever you want to call it, with attraction and repulsion of other magnets or whatever, or different types of metals and such. And so no matter what, if you set a magnet down on the table, there's always something going on that magnet. Even though you're looking at it, it don't look like anything's happening. But on a subatomic level, something must be occurring, because it still, somehow or another, is able to maintain that magnetic field for years, if not, permanently. They got permanent magnets, they got temporary magnets and such, and those are all things that they'll get in with their high-tech terminology. But the reason why I want you folks to listen in on this stuff right here, because there's something more going on to magnetism than meets the eye. And so whatever's going on that small level, whatever types of materials are prone to being magnetized or demagnetized or repelled by magnetism, so on and so forth, if you take all these things and you put them in together, you can start turning the gears with these things. Microscopically, down there where you can't see with your eye, you got to have special equipment in order to be able to see. But if you get these reactions going on, for example, think about uranium. It's naturally radioactive. Why is that? We actually don't really know. We got our ideas why, but there's something going on deep down inside there. Those materials they don't like each other for some reason, so they're trying to get rid of each other. There's certain things that are happening in the atmosphere that are causing these things to start to deteriorate themselves. What's the word that they use? It's like depleting whenever they're... Dad, burn it. I hate it when that happens. Well, they're decaying. That's the word I was looking for. They're natural, and during their natural decay, radioactive materials are releasing energy. Well, when that energy is being released, it's interacting with all the other energy around us. And so there's some wise science guys that figured out, well, hey, you know what? We could take this, if this does this on this scale, add a bunch of this together and make it a little bit stronger, and we can boil water with it. And then they turn that water into steam, and then they use that steam power and pressure to actually turn generators and so on. AKA, now we got nuclear power plants. But I'm thinking thinking a lot further past all that. I'm thinking way down into the simple of the thing. Whatever's going on in that permanent magnet while you're sitting here looking at it on the table doesn't look very exciting or anything. Don't look like there's really anything going on at all. But for some reason, somehow or another, it is able to produce a field, like a force field, an invisible force field around it, that one side is attractive and the other side is repulsive. That sounds funny. one side offends you and the other one don't. The other one likes you. Either way, that's what mad science is all about. But you look down in at that magnet, and you're not seeing anything, with your eyes, but there's something happening there. There's something going on with that material, something going on with nature, the way that nature is able to keep this thing constantly trying to align itself or realign itself, or basically maybe even try to be getting away from each other, but they can't because they're stuck in this bond until you introduce something like heat, where you can take magnetism, you can destroy a magnet with heat. So if you get a magnet hot, why is it that when that magnet gets hot, that all this energy is able to take away the magnetism? So it might have something to do with the temperature of whether something's really cold, such as superconductors. For some reason, if they get certain materials cold, super cold, then they're really super conductive. They'll allow electron flow through them really easy without resistance and all that kind of stuff. So there's something going on down there. And we're going to see if we can figure this thing out together. Because if we can figure out what is actually going on, Not what all the scientific high-tech terminology is trying to explain to you, but if we can actually look down in there, we can figure out that this material interacts with this material in a specific way, and when you put these two materials together, they produce a magnet. We know pretty much what the minerals are in magnets, and different types of natural basic magnets or whatever, what they call rare earth magnets, whatever. We get all that. We've heard all the science of that. But what we need to know is what is actually going on in that natural magnet, or even the unnatural magnet. Why is it that electricity and magnetism will work forward and backwards, one to produce the other and such? Why is it, what is actually happening in that tiny realm that we can't even see? We go by the electron theory. We can't even see the electron. When we look at atoms down in there, there's a fuzzy little picture, and it's all we can see. We can't really see what's actually happening in there, but something is going on. They say water is a dipole molecule. It has a positive side, it has a negative side. But why is that? Water isn't made of iron. What's going on down inside there? So if we can discover the actual root cause of what actually causes a magnet to stay a magnet. Like when you're looking at it on the table, it's boring. You can take a couple magnets and have a little bit of fun, but even that will wear out after a while. You can take magnets and stick things on refrigerators or whatever. There's so many uses for magnets, so many different types of magnets, and some really super strong neodymium magnets and such. There's some incredibly powerful magnets, some that are quite dangerous too. But nonetheless, if you can figure out what was going on way down in there, I'm talking about the simple of it, not all the high tech terminology and fancy equations and jumping into the quantum realm of things, which these couple podcasts that I'm going to play actually kind of get into a little bit of quantum physics. But that's not what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for is what is going on in nature that is able to sustain a magnetic field, and why is it that electricity and magnetism are such, go hand in hand? And what is it about water that, gives it a north and a south field? We can take magnetic fields, which we call microwaves, and we can sit there and rock water molecules so fast that they produce friction, at which turns out to produce heat, and then boil your food. Cook your food from microwaves, magnetic fields. We can send signals, radio signals, TV and telecommunications, all that kind of stuff. We can send it back and forth using these waves. So there was a guy named Tesla, did a lot of cool things and gave us a lot of cool ideas, and mad scientists took off and ran with it, and they figured out a lot of things. And so we live in this modern day society, but here we are in the year 2019, and we still haven't figured out exactly what electricity really is, what magnetism really is. The two of them together, they work hand in hand. But if we can get down to the root cause of what's actually occurring, whether it be actual electrons themselves by their spinning around, produces a magnetic field by everything trying to align itself, either way you have this magnetic pressure. I don't even know if that's even a scientific term, magnetic pressure, but there is a pressure involved. There's also an attraction, like a tractor beam, from Star Trek or Star Wars or something like that. You can track something. And there's actually ways to align certain magnets in order to, basically cause it to attract to a certain extent, but actually stop it. So there's a video that I posted on one or two shows back in the doggone chat rooms there. You can scroll back on there and you can find these videos where they've basically made a tractor beam magnet, and they're able to attract one magnet to the other, but it stops it right at a certain point where it starts to repel it and holds it right there in place, and you can drag these magnets around with each other and they never touch each other. It's pretty cool. If we can get down to that, we can solve the whole issue, and we can answer the question, are magnets proof of free energy? Because even when you're not doing nothing to them, they're still holding the field. How do they do that? And why? So I'm going to play a couple of these podcasts here, and I might jump in and out and mouth off once in a while. You know, crazy hair Chaziz got to do that. So we'll just have to see what happens.
If you take a piece of wood and put it next to another piece of wood, nothing happens. And if you take a piece of granite and put it next to another rock, still nothing. But if you take this piece of iron and put it next to this other piece of iron, magic. I mean, magnet. Magnetic objects are able to magically attract at long distances because they generate magnetic fields that extend invisibly out beyond the object. But the mystery is this. Where do magnetic fields come from?
Well, that's easy, Henry. We've known for a long time that electricity and magnetism are really just two sides of the same coin. Kind of like mass and energy, or time and space. They can be transformed into one another. And in fact, a magnetic field is just what an electric field becomes when an electrically charged object starts moving.
That makes sense for explaining why a current of electrons flowing through a wire causes this compass needle to move, or how currents in the Earth's outer core generate the geomagnetic field. But a bar magnet or the compass needle itself are just pieces of metal without any electrical current running through them.
Or are they? At the microscopic level, there are loads of electrons whizzing around the atoms and molecules that make up any solid.
Right. This brings up an excellent point. The magnetic behavior of any everyday object is influenced by a fascinating combination of effects ranging from the level of particles to atoms, collections of atoms, and collections of atoms. First, individual particles. Unlike the everyday workings of gravity and electricity, permanent magnets can only be fully understood as a quantum mechanical effect, in much the same way that particles like electrons and quarks have fundamental properties called mass and electrical charge. Most particles also have another intrinsic property called tiny magnet. Just kidding, it's called intrinsic magnetic moment. But really, that's just technical mumbo-jumbo saying that particles with electric charge also happen to be tiny magnets.
If you want to know why they're tiny magnets, well, you may as well ask, why are particles charged in the first place? Or why do objects with mass and energy attract each other gravitationally? No one knows. We just know that's the way the universe works.
Exactly, and since the 1920s, we've known that each individual electron or proton is basically a tiny magnet, which brings us to the level of atoms. An atom is a bunch of positively charged protons with a bunch of negatively charged electrons whizzing around them. The proton tiny magnets are about 1,000 times weaker than the electron ones, so the nucleus of the atom has almost no effect on the magnetism of the atom as a whole.
And you might think that since many, though not all, of the electrons are also moving, that like the current in a wire, they should generate magnetic fields due to that motion. And indeed they do. These are called orbital magnetic fields.
Except these don't usually contribute to the magnetic field of an atom. Here's why. Electrons in atoms are accurately and complicatedly described by quantum mechanics, but the gist of the story is that electrons congregate in shells around the nucleus. The electrons in any filled shell zoom equally in all directions, so the currents they generate cancel out and generate no magnetic field. These electrons also come in pairs whose...
So let's pause that for a second. I know you guys lost and gals out there lost. Some of you might not be, but others may be totally baffled. But basically, when they're talking about all these fields going around inside or outside this shell, this magnet, you know, and that they're, because they're going in different directions or whatever, that they cancel their magnetism out. But nonetheless, you got to still think about this. There is something going on down there. There's something going on what they call electrons are spinning around, and they're going around in this orbit. There's something actually occurring while these things are trying to constantly either stay in line or basically balance themselves out to zero, so to speak. So with that said, you know, while these magnets, you know, people thinking about, well, why couldn't I just run wire through these magnets and get these magnets to pick up that magnetic field while all this motion's going on down there? But the problem is, once these the wire gets wrapped around there, well, then suddenly all the the magnetic particles inside the wire itself, they align themselves. Everything is finally aligns itself, and then to our understanding of everything, everything stops. You know, but it's still, there's a force inside that magnet that is actually holding those electrons in place once they align themselves in that magnet. So when that magnet's in motion towards the wire, it will actually induce a current up until the point when it finally balances everything out. It's everything's aligned to where it needs. And so that's why we figured out that we got to keep this magnet moving back and forth. But what if you didn't have to keep that magnet moving back and forth? What if you understood what was actually going on with different types of materials, and you could take and put these two materials together that basically hated each other? They don't like each other at all. And so they're going to do something like you see in chemistry, where you get this runaway effect. They're just going crazy. You know, when you put certain chemicals together, they'll cause a chemical reaction that sometimes causes an explosion because there's so much power that's released from this deal. But what if you could find a way to create an unstable magnet that would still hold its magnetism because it still had all the particles necessary, but there was also something else inside this magnet that just would not allow it to get balanced out? Now, would that generate a lot of heat from all the fighting going on down in there? Or would it generate a lot of electricity? These are the questions that I'm trying to get to by showing, let you hear what the actual science folks are actually saying about what magnetism is and what they believe. You know, they said back in the 1920s or something like that. I can't remember what the actual date they just mentioned, but either way, this is what they say. We've known this since this day, but they don't really know what's actually going on down in there because they can't really see down far enough to find out what's causing what to happen. But when we know what causes what to happen, we can mix these three separate types of materials together, and we can make gunpowder. We know that if we introduce another force to that, we can cause that gunpowder to have a reaction, a chemical, explosive reaction. And so we're able to make firecrackers and such. You know, so if we can get down to the actual makeup of the magnet, and really seriously understand the forces that are causing this magnet to maintain this little miniaturized force field that we call magnetism, and not even have to move anything across there. It's just that these particles are interacting with each other on the same kind of, it's kind of ironic, on the same kind of effect that you would see when you look at something like uranium or something that is radioactive, and as it's decaying, it's releasing energy. But what if you could trap this energy so that it can't be released and it's all being forced back into the deal, back into the system to recycle itself? Think about that for a second.
Tiny magnets point in opposite directions and also cancel. However, in a half-filled shell, all of the electrons are unpaired, and their tiny magnets point in the same direction and add up, meaning that it's the intrinsic magnetism of the electrons in the outer shell that gives an atom the majority of its magnetic field. So atoms near the side of any of the major blocks of the periodic table, which have full or nearly full outer electron shells, aren't magnetic, and atoms in the middle of the blocks have half-full outer electron shells and are magnetic. For example, nickel, cobalt, iron, manganese, chromium, etc.
Wait, but chromium isn't magnetic.
Ah, but just because an atom is magnetic doesn't mean that a material made up of lots of that atom will be magnetic, which brings us to the level of crystals. When a bunch of magnetic atoms get together to make a solid, they generally have two options. One is for all the atoms to align their magnetic fields with each other, or they can align their magnetic fields in an alternating fashion so they all cancel out. The atoms will do whichever one requires less energy.
That's why chromium, for example, is a very magnetic atom, but a very unmagnetic solid, because it's one of the most anti-ferromagnetic materials that we know. Iron, on the other hand, is the namesake of ferromagnetism, so it is unsurprisingly ferromagnetic. Or, in usual parlance, magnetic.
Sometimes. The last and final level of magnetism is that of domains. Essentially, even in a magnetic material where the magnetic fields of atoms line up together, it's possible that one chunk of the material will have all its atoms lined up pointing one way, and another chunk will have all its atoms pointing another way, and so on.
If all of these domains are of a similar size, then none may be strong enough to force the others to align with it. In which case, a piece of iron, for example, may have no magnetic field at all because of all the warring magnetic kingdoms within it.
However, if you apply a strong enough magnetic field from outside the material, you can help one domain expand its control over its neighbors, and so on, until all of the domains have been unified into one kingdom, all pointing in the same direction.
And now, finally, you can rule with an iron fist! I mean, magnet. It's magnetic because it's ferromagnetic and all of the domains are aligned.
Exactly. What's remarkable is that magnetism is a fundamentally quantum property amplified to the size of everyday objects. Every permanent magnet is a reminder that quantum mechanics underlies our universe. In order for an everyday object to be magnetic, though, it has to have a unified kingdom of magnetic domains, each made up of bajillions of magnetic atoms which also need to be aligned with each other, each of which can only be magnetic in the first place if it has an approximately half-filled outer shell of electrons so their intrinsic magnetic fields can align and not cancel each other out. Not surprisingly, these criteria are pretty difficult to fulfill, which is why there are only a limited number of suitable materials you can use when you're building a magnet.
Or you could just run a current through any electrical conductor and produce a magnetic field that way.
But hey, why does that work in the first place? Click here to go over to Veritasium and we'll find out what special relativity and the speed of light have to do with electromagnets. I want to find out.
Alright, so that was the first one. Now we're going to click on the second one of his video, the one they just mentioned in there about special relativity. But before all that, you hear that there are certain materials out there that can be magnetized. You can turn different types of materials into magnets. And so, you know, by producing electrical current around this particular material, you can align these materials inside there, these little crystals or whatever. The atoms or the electrons, you can align them in there and it will retain magnetism. So you can make your own, homemade magnets, essentially. So there's something to that. If you can use electricity to produce magnetism and you can use electricity to align, electrons and such inside that particular material to actually produce a magnet, I basically would call it a synthetic magnet or something like that. It's not something natural, but nonetheless, it's using that same force in order to align these. So we know that we can take transistors and MOSFETs and stuff like that and a power source, and we can use the flow of electron current or whatever to fluctuate a field and actually produce a magnetic field, to get work done. But there's something a lot deeper going on down in there. And if we can actually get to that point right there, we know that certain materials can be magnetized, demagnetized, certain ones, are the different types of, repulsions of magnets like bismuth, it doesn't really like magnetic fields to some extent, kind of shields it, but to others, there's really no force that's actually strong enough to block out a magnetic field that we know of right at the moment, except another magnetic field, in which case these two magnetic fields will become one and they will actually align themselves. So, getting down to it, the mystery of magnets. What in the heck is going on down inside there that is able to hold that field, and not only hold that field instantaneously, when another field comes in contact with it, they become one, not just one magnet, but a stronger magnet. And they're able to hold that force until something else occurs. So with that said, let's play this next one down there. Some more high-tech terminology for you.
Only a few elements can be permanent magnets. Iron is one. Copper is not. But if you pass an electric current through any metal, it becomes a magnet. An electromagnet. But how does this work? Well, strangely enough, it's a consequence of special relativity.
Special relativity is the fact that in our universe, length and time aren't absolute. They're perceived differently by observers moving relative to each other, hence relativity. For example, if you measure carefully enough, you'll find that time passes slower for observers moving relative to you. Hey Derek, when did you last shave?
6 hours ago. Actually, it was 5 hours, 59 minutes, and 59.999999999 seconds.
And moving objects are also contracted in their direction of motion.
You're looking slim, only in your frame of reference. So when an object is moving relative to you, it actually takes up less space than when it's not moving. And even though this effect is obviously way tinier than we've shown, length contraction is what makes an electromagnet work. Picture a copper wire. It consists of positive metal ions swimming in a sea of free negative electrons. Now, the number of protons is equal to the number of negative electrons, so overall the wire is neutral. So if there were a positive charge, or positively charged cat nearby, it would experience no force from the wire at all. And even if there were a current in the wire, the electrons would just be drifting in one direction, but the density of positive and negative charges would still be the same, and so the wire would be neutral, so no force on the kitty. But what if the cat starts moving? Imagine, for simplicity, that the cat is moving in the same direction as the electrons with the same velocity. Well, now, in my frame of reference, the wire is still neutral, and so there should be no force on the cat. But consider the same situation in her frame of reference.
In the cat's frame of reference, the positive charges in the wire are moving, so according to special relativity, their separation will be ever so slightly contracted. Also, from this perspective, the electrons aren't moving, so they'll be more spread out than before. Remember, objects take up more space when they're not moving than when they are. These two changes together mean there's a higher density of positive charges in the wire, so it's no longer neutral, it's positively charged, which means that the positively charged cat will feel a repulsive electric force from the wire.
But in my frame of reference, this seems mysterious. There's no force on a stationary charged cat, but a moving cat is somehow repelled from this neutral wire. How do you account for that force? Well, we say it is the magnetic force. And that's mainly because a wire with current in it deflects nearby magnets. So really, what this experiment shows is that a magnetic field is just an electric field viewed from a different frame of reference. In the cat's frame of reference, it is repelled from the wire due to the electric field created by the excess positive charges produced by the effects of length contraction. In my frame of reference, the cat is repelled from a neutral wire due to the magnetic field created by the current flowing in the wire. So whether you see it as an electric or a magnetic field just depends on your frame of reference, but in either case, the results are the same. So an electromagnet is an everyday example of special relativity in action. Now that might seem crazy, since electrons drift through wires at about 0.00000000001% the speed of light. So how can special relativity have anything to do with it? Well, the truth is, there are enough electrons in a wire, and the electric interaction is so amazingly strong that even the minuscule effects of length contraction can produce significant charge imbalances that produce a noticeable force.
So, special relativity explains electromagnets. But what about permanent magnets?
Yeah. I mean, there can't be electrical currents flowing around inside lumps of rock, can there? Click here to go to Minute Physics, where we'll explore magnetite, compasses, and all the wizardry of permanent magnets.
Alright, well, I didn't get that next video that he's talking about. We could be here all day putting different videos from that particular channel. So if you want to check out more about that with the view of what he's talking about, just go there to superchat.html and click on one of them videos and subscribe to his channel if you like that kind of stuff. But the question that he asked there at the end was whether or not there was electricity basically running through, you know, those different types of rocks. And I think there actually is electricity running through these rocks. You know, when you think about electrons, the way that it's explained in science and how everything has to balance itself out and the interaction between the electrons and the protons and the neutrons and so on, that imagine if you could put more electrons in there for a lot less of input, like, for example, you know, how static electricity works or negative ion generators or stuff like that. You know, there's ways to make solid-state circuitry that will actually you know, cause that interaction, to put more electrons, you know, going down that wire. Well, you're producing a lot of voltage. And since, you know, I keep telling everybody voltage is pressure and that's how we get work done, voltage to me is what actually matters. So I really don't care about the current per se at the moment, because I know that I can store that, and using different types of storage methods, you know, capacitors and batteries or whatever, that I'm able to, you know, generate the current, you know, back later on down the line. So right out of the gate, I couldn't care less about, you know, current and all that kind of stuff. All I care about is the actual voltage itself, because it's what the electrons are doing that intrigues me. It's not what, you know, electricity is per se. It's just that when you're able to understand how to really simply, with very little input, be able to produce a massive amount of voltage, and then we get down, break down into what's actually going on in that magnet, and you know that these when these electrons are interacting with each other, they're producing a stronger magnetic field, then maybe it could be something as simple as using a negative ion generator, something, a little low voltage device that doesn't even get hot, to just produce a flow of extra electrons going through this wire in order to actually produce the stronger magnetic fields that we're talking about. And different types of materials, you know, which ones will allow current to flow easier, or, you know, which ones will, you know, have less electrons or more electrons or whatever, to get the best, the most efficient out of the least amount of input. And I'm thinking that, you know, even though you go up to a rock or whatever, a piece of iron, and you touch it, you don't always get shocked, but under certain circumstances, you will get shocked. You know, like big old towers up in the radio towers and stuff, they have to ground those things to the earth in order to balance everything out, because there's an actual equation out there that will tell you for every meter that you get off the ground, every meter or every yard, depending on which standard you're on, there's 100 volts per meter as you go up. The higher you get up into the thousands, if not millions of volts, because of the way that everything's acting, you know, the way that nature does what nature does. We know nature has magnetic materials. We know nature has its own magnetic field. And so there must be some massive amount of power. There's some things that are actually going on the micro level that are basically affecting the entire of the world, like everything out there is made up of energy. And according to the way that science explains the electron theory, then nothing's actually solid. There's something moving down in there, right down at the little tiny of everything. There's something actually going on. There's energy going on, and all we got to do is find out what that actually is. What materials are interacting with each other? What chemicals are interacting with each other? Is it actually water? Is it something in the the atom, the makeup of hydrogen and oxygen reacting with each other? We know that if you separate or combine the hydrogen and the oxygen molecule, that it actually releases electrical charge. So could be that since the earth is 3/4 covered in water, and everything that surrounds you, you know, there's hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and all these other little trace gases in the air, plus dust particles and maybe little tiny ice crystals or whatever, all this energetic stuff going on around you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And under certain circumstances, something as simple as rubbing your feet on the carpet will produce a massive charge, that when you reach out to touch something metal or something else that is conductive, it wants to balance that charge out, so it'll transfer it over to whatever it is that you're going towards. You know, it'll leap across that gap. So when we discover exactly what's happening in magnets, I think magnets will actually prove that energy is free. Somehow or another, that magnet, without any interaction from you, only interactions from nature, is able to produce a strong field. There's a force there. You've got some pressure pushing out or pulling in one way or the other. And you got a north side, you got a south side, and it all somehow or another directs itself to the center of this magnet. So whatever's going on in the center of this magnet might be the clue that we need to be able to figure this thing out. So I got another podcast, and I'm going to start playing this one right here for you.
Electricity is vital to our civilization. So what is electricity and how does it work? To explain electricity, we need to zoom past the molecular and into the atomic level. Atoms are the smallest things we can kind of see, but not with the naked eye. Only with a scanning, tunneling microscope can we get a glimpse of somewhat fuzzy spheres. To really understand electricity, we must go even further and look inside an atom. This is where it gets complicated, because the inside of an atom cannot be seen, at least not at the time of writing. So we will use this representation of the inside of an atom. This is called the Bohr model. Keep in mind that it is not to scale and only two-dimensional. This model is also known as the planetary model. Modeling the parts of an atom as planets orbiting a sun or moons around a planet. While actually these orbiting moons are not at any one place at any one time at all, but exist more as regions or clouds around the core. However inaccurate the Bohr model might be, it will do for our explanation of electricity. Atoms consist of protons and neutrons. These form the nucleus of the atom. Orbiting the nucleus are the electrons. It's these electrons that are responsible for electricity, hence the name. Think of these orbits more as shells surrounding the nucleus. What type of atom, which element it is defined by the number of protons in the nucleus at the center. Atoms of one element all have the same number of protons, but can have different numbers of neutrons and electrons. It's this variable number of electrons that is important to our understanding. Electrons, which are far lighter than the protons in the nucleus, can relatively easily move. And this is important because the movement of electrons is what forms an electric current. The atom's protons account for the positive charge of the nucleus, and the electrons for the negative charge. In a stable, resting, or rather, neutral electrical condition, these charges balance each other out within the atom. This gives the atom a net electric charge of zero. For each positive proton, you will find one negative electron. In this state, the atom is at its lowest possible energy level, which we call the ground state of the atom. However, we can change the atom's charge or energy level by causing it to gain or lose electrons.
See, one of the questions that I always have every time I listen to all these different documentaries is, how do they know this? I mean, seriously, they can't even see down far enough to know this. So most of it is all theoretical or even speculation for that matter. But sometimes I think about, if you actually watch what's going on in nature on a larger scale, where masses of water molecules are going down the river, and you see how this water flows and how it interacts with each other, and you know that at certain temperatures these water molecules will do certain things. They'll expand, you know, like in steam pressure and stuff like that. And so you can see on a... What tarnation is that noise? You can see on a scale, a larger scale, that there's something really going on there, you know. And you know by the different types of physics that we've studied throughout the years what you can do to water in order to make it do certain things. And so maybe, just maybe, what's going on down there could be replicated by what you're actually seeing up here. Maybe it's standard all the way down to the smallest, tiniest to where you can't see it at all level, you know, all these the tiniest portion of what makes up a water molecule. Maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe the pressure and everything has something to do with it. Even water has an attractive force to it. If you've ever looked at how, you know, whenever a leaf falls off of a tree and then how it sort of seems like it sucks to the top of that water somehow because there's energy involved. It's amazing. So, you know, I always wonder how it is that they, without actually seeing the physical, what's going on down in there, without actually being tiny enough to witness what's actually occurring, how they can figure all these things out like this.
When the atom has fewer electrons than protons, it becomes positively charged. But when the atom has more electrons than protons, the net charge swings back the other way and it becomes negatively charged. More electrons than protons mean the atom is negatively charged. Fewer electrons than protons mean it is positively charged. Losing or gaining electrons changes the atom's electric charge. The remainder of this video we will color code the atoms as follows. A positive charge or absence of electrons is represented with red. A negative charge, a surplus of electrons, is represented with blue. A neutral charge, or a balance between electrons and protons, is represented by a blend of red and blue, purple. So when in a ground state or uncharged, it looks like this, and it's called an atom. When charged, negatively or positively, it looks like these. Instead of atoms, when there is a charge, these are called a negative or positive ion. Each shell of an atom can hold a maximum number of electrons.
So, when he's talking about a negative or positive ion, that's what I was thinking about with the negative ion generators. They use them around houses for, attracting dust particles and stuff like that. But what I'm trying to get at is, even if it is to do with the electrons, if it's the electrons that are little tiny magnets spinning around trying to align themselves around a positive proton, but they can't because they're negative on all sides, and so it's like spinning around in this little orbit and producing this, little magnetic shell, so to speak, around that which is actually making up the, the rest of the atom and such. And all that, anytime anything interacts with that, it releases what we call electricity, an electrical charge or whatever. But if you could know that that's what's going on, instead of having to move a strong magnetic field back and forth across this wire in order to shake these electrons up, if you could produce either a negative ion or a positive ion and send that down that line to actually reproduce what's going on naturally and produce a stronger magnetic field, then we could build from that point on. We wouldn't need superconductors. We could build super generators by utilizing what we've learned by how these doggone magnets are actually doing what it is that they're doing. What is causing that magnet to be able to maintain that toroidal effect around that? It's got this big old bubble. It's like the doggone shields on the Star Trek Enterprise or whatever. It's a force field. It's an attractive field, depending on which side of it you stand on. And so if we can send a signal, just a little signal down that wire, just enough to interact with those electrons to get them to build that strong magnetic field that we want, then we'd have things like radio. We'd have things like wireless energy. We'd have things like Wi-Fi. We'd have things like, wait a second, we already got those things, don't we? Let's listen some more. This is getting intriguing, folks.
The inner shell can hold 2 electrons, the second can hold 8, the third 18, and there are elements with all 7 known shells. Shells are populated with electrons from the inside out, meaning that added electrons always go for the innermost shell possible with a spot left. The number of electrons on the outermost shell determines the reactivity of the atom. This shell is called the valence shell, and its electrons are called valence electrons. When the outermost shell is full, the atom is generally stable and least reactive. You may be familiar with the term and effects of static electricity. When you, for instance, shuffle your feet over a nice soft carpet, you build up a positive charge, because negatively charged electrons are being lost to the carpet. Carpets are often made from a material with the properties of an insulator. Insulators do not easily give up electrons, but can get a local charge when electrons from a conductor are rubbed off on them. An insulator's valence shell is already quite full of electrons. These electrons will just sit there until something else takes them away. However, your body is a conductor. Conductors have loosely bound valence electrons, which are easily transferred or lost, in this case from your body to the area of the carpet where you're shuffling. Instead of you and the carpet having a neutral charge, a charge imbalance is being created between you and the carpet. Now, when you touch a metal object, for instance a doorknob, you get zapped. The doorknob may be neutrally charged, it is metal, and metals too are conductors with loosely bound electrons on the outer shells of their atoms. These electrons immediately move to your body to restore the charge imbalance, giving you a jolt. Nature always seeks a neutral charge equilibrium.
See, that's what I keep saying. Nature's always trying to balance itself out. And so all we got to do is know that if we throw something off balance by extracting electrons from one and then bringing that object close to another that has more electrons in it, you can actually get it to try to replace the electrons in the same sense, create a current going through your body that you feel there. Static electricity. So with inventions like the Van de Graaff generator, the Lord Kelvin device generator, the Wimshurst machine, and other static like the Hauksbee device, you know, we can take and we can rub a couple materials together and we can get these materials to exchange electrons and basically build up an electrical charge. So why couldn't we do the same thing instead of just building a generator to try to move magnetic fields back and forth across coils of wire? Why couldn't we use that friction, which is going on as well, to put two different types of materials together that will loosely rub across each other and build up an extra static charge, guiding that static charge and those extra electrons into those coils of wire? And essentially what you would end up with would be a multiple signal generator. You would have electrons trying to escape from one area to try to make it down there, keeping a constant imbalance while this thing is actually turning, being able to produce more power than you would have otherwise for a whole lot less input. The video that I'm going to be putting out here pretty soon, the moment I get this this particular generator, probably explain this a little bit more. And essentially, it is a dual signal generator, where it actually produces current on one side and high voltage on the other side, and these two are guided in to interact with each other to end up giving more efficiency to the process that's actually going on in order to generate the electricity. But because of the types of materials that I'm actually making this particular one out, this is a device that you'll want to keep an eye on, because it's going to incorporate all of the best of the best of what we know about what we call electricity and how it's generated, whether it be static electricity or whatever, even thermoelectrics for that matter. You know, you take all these things together, they're gears in a machine, and you put them together and you can get this gear to interact with that gear in a specific manner, like one big gear and one little tiny gear. That big gear, it has a lot of torque, But that little gear, because of its size, actually has a lot of speed. It don't take near as many turns in order to get that thing to go all the way around. The same thing could apply with the way that we're using electrons as far as the electron theory goes and how electricity is actually generated. We would be able to produce generators that would keep the amount of current necessary to keep filling in the gaps for where the high voltage can actually come in rapidly. I mean, it comes in and it builds up a lot of pressure right out of the gate. But when you're trying to run a generator or you're trying to run a device that requires a lot of high current, you need something to supplement that that high voltage in order to fill in the gaps, so to speak, to put back the volume. But by doing it in this fashion, you don't have to no longer push out a whole lot of current, which is actually causing things to get hot. You're just pushing out just enough current to fill in the gaps of what the high voltage can't get in there to make enough current to run the specific device you want. By doing this, you can actually tune this thing in to the extent where now you can run your appliances at the maximum efficiency by only giving them the amount of power necessary for those two magnetic fields to interact with each other and do the work that they do. So by having a dual signal generator, you got the current you need to fill in the gaps for what the high voltage signal can't keep up with. And by raising or lowering the frequency of the high voltage itself, you can ramp that voltage up astronomically. You can get thousands, if not millions of volts for very little input. But those thousands or millions of volts won't be able to do what that current is actually doing at the moment, because of we need a lot of electron flow to produce a really super strong magnetic field to run the inefficient junk that we're running right now. But if we take these things, all these physics, basic science, and put them together, now we can use the pressure from the high voltage and the current from the other side of this dual signal generator to put these powers in together and give them both forces necessary to do exactly what it is that we're wanting to do, but do it at an extent to where we're not trying to force too much current down a wire that is going to meet resistance and produce that heat that breaks that magnetic field back down into, you know, its balance again. So by not generating heat, we make that thing even more efficient than before. And by utilizing everything that we've understood about how electrons are actually built up and charges that are occurring by materials rubbing together, we can build generators that will specifically guide electrons where we want them to go and produce the magnetic field that we need to get work done, and do it in such an incredible efficient manner that we're no longer generating heat and destroying our appliances, which means that you would have a generator that would not destroy your appliance, and that means that you don't have to keep on replacing everything all the time because it finally reaches its thermal breakdown and fails. So by getting down into the tiny of everything, what is actually going on down inside there, until we can get down small enough to see what it is that's really seriously going on. We know the cause and effect by putting this material with that material. We know the cause and effect by putting the magnet next to the wire. We can get this magnet to do certain things. We know that it produces electrical current. We also know that one going this way and one going that way will cancel themselves out, and that one going this way and one going that way will actually cause a cogging effect that will fight with it, and it will cause that when you're trying to force it to do this unnatural act, it will actually generate heat and in the process destroy your magnetic field that you're trying to use in order to do the work that you want to get done. So we have every single answer. We just don't have every single explanation scientifically to show what it is that's actually occurring on here. But we do have the mechanical knowledge of what is actually goes on, what you can use this force for, that force, this material, that chemical, and so on down the line. We know that something is trying to align itself when we move that magnet towards that copper wire. We can see this because we get a physical reaction. So regardless of all the high-tech terminology, regardless of what's actually going on the nano scale right down there, we're able to build electronics and machinery to do certain tasks. And we know that if we try to push too much current through anything, we can intentionally generate heat by throwing this balance off in the way that we do and trying to force this energy down the line. But what happens if you have this system that I'm talking about where you're actually taking that energy and you're putting it in there in the fashion, like for example, you don't have to have a lot of current in order to get a diode to do its job. An LED, it only requires the electron flow. Well, if you push too much current through an LED, it'll get hot and burn up. But what happens if you don't push too much current through that LED? It'll stay cool. But it'll still do what it does. It'll still, if it's a light emitting diode, then it'll push light out. And in reality, all diodes actually do push light out, but different light spectrums. That's for a whole different show. But nonetheless, if you get this this multiple frequency generator to send the signals in at a harmonious manner, so to speak, with getting the current flow that you want. The diodes, they don't need current to change an AC wave into a DC. Alright? So I'm able to take a 5 volt DDS signal generator, pulse a microwave oven transformer, get a high voltage wave at a low current, and send that high voltage AC wave down through capacitors and then dump it into a bridge rectifier and change that from an AC wave to a DC in order to be able to charge DC capacitors and then in turn bleed that off into whatever load I want to run or even charge batteries for that matter. But the key is it didn't take current to do that. It only took electrons to do that. And so if we can send this down in through our computers, same way, guiding just the amount of current necessary to keep the forward pressure, wide enough, so to speak, in order to keep that volume filled up, but not any more than what we actually need in order to run that transistor, resistor, or the processor in our computers or whatever. All these things get hot because you're shoving too much power to them. And everybody thinks, well, the more power you shut to them, the more processing you can get done faster. Well, that's not the case. None of this is going to happen any quicker because you shove too much power to that specific system. It doesn't require the heat in order to do the job. It requires the electron flow in order to do the job and some amount of current, but not near the amount of current that we actually are pushing to these devices. So by building a generator that will put this energy out there in a harmonious fashion, we can save our doggone computers, make them last longer, make them be more efficient, where they're not generating all this heat that's getting wasted out into, wherever. Right now, it's a plus because all this extra heat being generated by all these computers and all this duct tape and baling wire around here is kind of helping warm up the room. So it's actually not being wasted. I'm trying to absorb as much heat that's being wasted from the computers into my body because of the effects of global warming going on outside with all that snow that's up to your neck. And the frost that, is like biting at your nose and such. So, by trying to figure out what it is an actual magnet itself does, there's all different types of magnets. I got one right here in my hand. It's a neodymium, 3/4 inch neodymium sphere. And these are really cool. If you've seen my video, Neodymium Magnet Accelerator, that's a video to keep an eye on, because what's going on in that might very well explain what's actually occurring with the electron that's flowing around and how those fields are interacting with each other. It's like when you walk up there and put your thumb over a garden hose and you ramp that current down or up to volt pressure. When you put your thumb over that, you cause that backup to produce a lot of pressure that pushes forward and shoots that water clear across the yard into your sister or your brother's eye or something. You know, big old super soaker squirt guns. You know how to push pressure to it and cause it to go way across there. Well, maybe that magnet spinning around the way it's doing is interacting with the electrons in the copper wire that is producing a massive amount of chaos down in there that's creating a stronger magnetic field, that eventually the stronger magnetic field's going to win out and it's going to try to push that current back in the opposite direction, causing the input circuit, which is the driver of the neodymium magnet accelerator, to get hot. I don't want it to get hot, because the moment it gets hot, it could actually destroy itself. And so now I got an option. I can use technology already available on the market to allow all that extra current that's trying to push back. Think about this for a second. If you take a garden hose and you got the thing on a heavy duty spray deal, if you got it wide out there in the open, you can spray it around, you got a stream. But if you take that same garden hose and you put it put your face up to a bucket and then shove that garden hose inside that bucket, well, that power is going to go inside there, fill that bucket up, and come back and slosh your face. That's the same exact thing that's going on with that magnetic accelerator, is that I'm spraying all this pressure up inside there. I got this magnet going crazy around there, and as it's going crazy, it's interacting with the electrons inside there, causing them to line, unalign, realign, and unalign back and forth, and they're producing another strong effect, which is that magnetic field that keeps this thing going around yet even faster. So, by looking at the magnetic accelerator video, you can actually get a view of what we believe the electron is actually doing around the nucleus of the atom. So it's a large scale version of what's actually going on down there in the tiny little realm that we call, micro science or whatever. So this magnet, this one magnet in my hand could represent the actual electron. The forces of what's occurring when this magnet spinning around in a circle and trying to align and realign things could actually be what's going on in the atom itself. So when you look at the neodymium magnet accelerator, are you actually looking at a model of the atom with the protons and the neutrons and the electrons? And think about what would happen if you introduced another magnet inside there. Amazing. So, folks, keep an eye on that neodymium magnet accelerator, because it may very well be a large version to show you, so that you can see inside this thing, see what's going on. And you can see the visual effects, the physical effects that this is actually occurring. We know that when we excite electrons around that atom, if we excite them too much, we can hit them with high frequencies, and we can get noble gases such as argon, neon, and xenon, and helium and such to basically energize each other, trying to take away and exchange electrons back and forth so rapidly that we produce this effect that we call plasma, the fourth state of matter. You know, we've got a solid, a liquid, a gas, and we got plasma. So we're able to energize these electrons, whatever's going on down there in the microscopic nanoscale or what picture right there. We get this visual effect of this glowing plasma on the outside of this thing. So we got these nifty little plasma globes that are really cool to look at. put your finger on there and the energy will follow you around. It's looking for a path to ground, just like the Tesla coil. But keep an eye out. I got a newer version, the neodymium magnet accelerator. And it'll be put together here pretty soon. And what I want you to think about when you look at that, think about what's actually going on in the atomic level. What's actually going on down there with the proton, the neutron, and the electron, and how all these things are functioning. It might very well be a really good teaching tool to show people in the future a better way to use electricity, a better way to generate electricity. And it shows you right there where you can see it and you can understand it. It's the cause and effect right there before your very eyes. You can look into this thing and you can see it without having to peer through a little tiny microscope to see what's going on around there. And the amount of energy that's going on down there on the micro scale is magnified by what's going on up here in the real world. What you're actually seeing right there. That circular, the way that science explains the atom. So, the neodymium magnet accelerator is a whole lot more than you think. It's a whole lot more than meets the eye. So I hope you all bear with me. There is a method to my madness. And if we can get this understanding of what's actually going on down in the quantum realm of things, then we will have the perfect machines. We'll be able to put just enough power to everything and nothing will get messed up. There won't be any waste. There won't be any pollution. There won't be any dangers because we know which frequencies of radiations are bad for us. We know which ones are good for us. See, when you talk about the word radiation, the first thing everybody's, oh no, not radiation, because we've been told terrible things about radiation. You know, we don't want to be getting irradiated, so we're panicked. But in reality, there's all different types of radiations. Radiation, basically, you know, things radiating away from something. You know, it's deteriorating, it's depleting itself, it's releasing this energy. And this energy, as it's coming towards us, depending on how fast it's coming towards us, what size the wave is, it's depending on what it's going to do to us when it gets here. Like a microwave is a short, fast, super short, fast wave. But if it's in contact with a water molecule, because the water molecule is a dipole molecule, has a north and south, it's rocking it back and forth and it causes us to get hot. So to some extent, microwaves aren't a bad thing if we want to stay warm from the inside out. But if we exceed the limits of what our bodies can actually tolerate, we can sit there and boil ourselves with microwaves. We don't want to do that. But there are the same effects with slower waves. It doesn't matter whether it's a microwave, which is super fast, or a slower wave that is super warm or super slow but long. You know, it's just barely does just enough to warm the molecule up, but not enough to destroy it. It's incredible efficiency. You're talking about being able to use something as simple as a sound wave to heat your house. Because every water molecule that's in the air, every water molecule that is you, can be comfortably and gently raised up to the temperature to match the 98.6 degrees of your body. All you're doing is massaging the water molecules, and you're causing them to get warm. See, farmers have figured out a long time ago that if you take and put a paddle down inside a pond that you want to keep not frozen so that your cattle can get to the pond to get water, they will put a paddle into the water and a big deal to catch the wind on the top. And as the wind is blowing by, it keeps the molecules of water circulating inside there. And as long as those molecules of water are moving about and rubbing up against each other, they're keeping it warm. Just warm enough to where it can't fall below freezing temperature. So as long as that thing is spinning around, and even if it was really super cold outside, and this wind, as long as the wind was still blowing, it would not be able to freeze that water until one force was able to overcome the next force. But you could use something as simple as sound waves, because all these waves that are going out there, they're doing the same thing. They have a north and a south peak, according to what we've understand about electromagnetism and science, and how all these energies are moving around the room. You could put on a certain tune on the radio, and it would keep your house warm. Because that wave coming out just at the right timing would bring your body temperature up, and when it got too warm in the room, you just turn the music down. Think about it. Is that not some science fiction kind of Star Wars, Star Trek thing? But this is what we've actually got as science fact. If you send the right wave through a water molecule, you'll cause that water molecule to get hot. If you send an even more faster and more powerful wave through that same water molecule, you'll separate the hydrogen and oxygen and cause a spark which will ignite the two of them, one with an implosion and one with an explosion on demand. When water releases the energy that's stored within it, it's amazing how much power that it actually has. So we have the technology and the knowledge of how to literally turn water, which is an indestructible molecule, into fuel, energy. I'm just blown away. Folks, if you can't find free energy, you haven't been listening to mad science. It's there. And I believe the answer to the question, are magnets proof of free energy, is 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt, yes. You didn't do nothing to that magnet except set it on that table. Yet that magnet still has a field surrounding it. It has some sort of force field. It has some sort of tractor beam. It's able to set there for as long as it sits there and still maintain that field. A year later, you come back and put anything that is magnetic and next to that thing, and it'll attract it. It's like a battery that never goes dead. And the only way to destroy that magnet from that point on is to introduce something else into that, which is heat. Heat that magnet up. Get it really hot. For some reason, when it gets really hot, everything gets all loose and sloppy, and it basically unaligns itself. And until some other outside force realigns all that and cools it back down, it's not a magnet anymore. By observing what just occurred right there, and observing what's going on in the neodymium magnet accelerator, how that magnet is acting just like what they say that the electron is doing. There's your answer. Right there. So yeah, the answer to the question, are magnets proof of free energy, as far as I'm concerned, is yes. Irrefutably. Now, go talk to the science field. The mainstream science. The know-it-alls with the sheepskin or whatever. The degrees or piece of paper on the wall, the label, the terminology, and all the other things that come along with being so-called recognized sciences of the world. Well, they might have something different to say. They'll take you down the doggone whole quantum physics and muddy up your brain with all kinds of equations and every crazy thing under the sun, and talk about quarks and all these different particles, the boson, the bozos more like it. Mainstream science has dropped the ball. If mainstream science can't explain things in simplicity, then they have absolutely no idea what they're even talking about. They just have theories. Theoretical ideas of what they believe is going on. Now, old crazy-haired Chaziz, on the other hand, who has heard all their theories, studied all their physics and all their science, has basically put everything to the test. And I scaled up the atom. And I now call it the neodymium magnet accelerator. So that you can see what they're saying and try to figure out whether or not what they're saying is what's actually going on in the tiny realm. So, that's science. That's real science. That's mad science. Folks, I'm going to play a little bit of more of this podcast right here. But if you understand any little tiny bit of what I'm telling you right now, then I've done my job. Because when you see the neodymium magnet accelerator do what it is that I'm saying it's going to do, it's based off of actual science, it's based off of actual physics, it's based off of I'm going to see if this is actually what's going on in the tiny realm by scaling it up to something that everybody can not only see inside of and actually see what physics is involved in there. You got centrifugal forces. That magnet is whooping around that thing. You got magnetic flux lines that are sitting there spiraling out back and forth trying to align and realign and do everything that it is that they say is doing on the tiny realm. And the result is that this thing will turn around and it will get the circuit board so hot it'll quite literally start a wire fire unless we figure out a way to take the energy off of that thing and send it somewhere else. I'm putting it on the table, folks. It's up to everyone else out there to share it with the world. It's up to everyone else out there to take this doggone thing to its limits and beyond. And that's not the only one. When I put the next generator on the line, I'm coming out there and I'm telling you that this is a dual signal generator. It has a dual purpose to it. When you see this thing, it's not only going to look good, it's going to do exactly what I say it's going to do. And I'm not trying to sell anybody any kind of plans to this stuff. If you see what I'm doing right there, you can see inside of it. There ain't no hidden batteries, there ain't no hidden wires. It's all right there in front of your very eyes. And if you see it, you can understand it scientifically. You can tell anybody and his brother how you saw it, have them try it for themselves, and if it doesn't do exactly what I say, come back and we'll sort it out. They said they needed clean, renewable alternative energy. It's on the table. It is on the table. You get me the dream team. You bring me the best of your best after your most brilliant minds, and you set them down at the table with me. We'll pull our resources and we'll give the world exactly what they said they wanted. It's here. Right now.
A net charge of zero. Materials with high electron mobility are called conductors. Materials with low electron mobility are called insulators. A commonplace object where you can see an insulator and conductor working together is in a simple wire. This electrical wire has a copper core and a plastic shell. Copper atoms have a very loosely bound electron on the outside, as seen here again using the Bohr model. This makes copper a perfect conductor, whereas the plastic is an insulator. The millions, if not billions, of copper atoms in this piece of wire easily exchange electrons, allowing us to make an electrical circuit with it. Think of an electrical circuit as a path that connects two points with a possible charge imbalance, usually connecting a negatively charged point to a positively charged point. Like marbles in a tube, moving from a high place full of marbles to a low place lacking marbles. Imagine these marbles all along the circuit, each marble being an electron. These marbles originate from a power source, for instance, a battery. And we'll explain how batteries work exactly in a future video. Electrons move from the negative to the positive, as we've established earlier. The battery pushes out electrons from one end and attracts them from the other. As one is pulled in, one is pushed out. Despite the electrons moving relatively slowly, this effect causes the energy to be transferred almost instantaneously. To create such a flow of electrons, we must provide them a path with a conductor, such as the copper within our wire. If this path is blocked by an insulator, such as plastic, rubber, or air in the case of a cut wire, the electrons cannot continue to flow, stopping the electric current. The key to the flow of electricity is making a continuous electrical circuit, connecting a wire between a source of electrons.
Also, what he just said right there, let me back it up just a hair. Listen real close to what he just said.
As one is pulled in, one is pushed out. Despite the electrons moving relatively slowly, this effect causes the energy to be transferred almost instantaneously. To create such a flow of electrons, we must provide them a path with a conductor, such as the copper within our wire. If this path is blocked by an insulator, such as plastic, rubber, or air in the case of a cut wire, the electrons cannot continue to flow.
So, when he's talking about putting an insulator in between there, when I talk about high voltage and the way that voltage actually interacts with different types of material, and they also talk about finding a superconductor, all right? A superconductor allows current to flow without the resistance. The thing about high voltage is voltage doesn't meet that resistance because it's not trying to force too much current down. It's basically like a traffic jam out on the highway. You get too many cars on the road and everything slows down and people start getting hot because they're getting mad. And the cars are sitting there running. They want to go down the road, but they can't go down the road. So you get a lot of friction built up. That's what a superconductor would give them, a path so that they can get around this doggone thing. But if they could turn their vehicle into the equivalence of the electron and become high voltage instead, they'd just be able to skim right on by the doggone resistance that's down there. They don't have to worry about it being an insulator anymore because electrons don't care about insulators. If you listen to what they were talking about earlier about how when you're rubbing your feet on the carpet, the electrons coming off of you are sticking to the carpet, and then whenever you're depleted of electrons, there's something else that already has more electrons than you, and so when you reach out to grab that doorknob, those electrons will skate right across to your finger and give you a jolt while all that thing energy just instantaneously balances itself out to your body. But we have superconductors by not using energy the way that we're doing them right now. Every single material out there becomes a superconductor. If you understand what it is that I've been trying to say to people, that energy and the frequency range at which you're shipping it down the line, and you want to get it down there, because you want all these electrons down there. You want just enough current flow to fill in the gaps. So with a dual signal generator, you're not only pushing out the current necessary to fill in those gaps, but you're also pushing out the voltage pressure necessary to do the work that you want done without the expense of the wasted heat energy. So that insulator between there, it doesn't work anymore. You take high voltage high enough, you'll eat right through any insulator. There's a dielectric. Go look up the term dielectric in capacitors, and you'll find out that every single thing has a voltage breakdown point. It can only withstand so many volts before even glass it'll go right through glass, which is the best dielectric out there. You can get thousands and thousands of volts with lots of current going through glass. It takes a whole lot of melting temperature in order to melt glass. But if you understand what's going on there, that means you could build storage banks with glass and aluminum or glass and any type of metal, because glass is the best dielectric. It can hold a whole lot of power. And if you understand how that power is actually pushed into that capacitor, then you'll know. All we're doing is exchanging electrons or adding more electrons to any given deal in order to get something accomplished. That's why this podcast that I'm playing to you, even though the technology, the terminology used sometimes in there about the mathematical equations or the names of what science calls things, it may seem mind-boggling. But every bit of what they're saying right there can be explained in such a ridiculously simple fashion. If you understand water and water pressure and plumbing, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Stopping the electric current. The key to the flow of electricity is making a continuous electrical circuit, connecting a wire between a source of electrons and an attractor of electrons. All electrical devices are powered this way. That is why your battery has two poles, a source and an attractor, a negative and a positive. This is also why your electrical plug has at least two tongs, one for incoming electrons, one for outgoing. You see, electrons are not spent, they do not cease existing. They are mere carriers of charge and can only be useful on their way to their destination. Take note that connecting two poles of a power source directly can actually be very dangerous. This is what's called a short circuit, because there is nothing between the source and the destination of electrons to power, such as a lamp or television. This means that the electron flow will not encounter any resistance. The release of energy when short-circuiting is therefore instant, often paired with the involved wire heating dangerously. This is why buildings and some devices have fuses. These automatically cut the current flow when the current becomes too high, preventing damage or worse. In the next videos on electricity, we'll learn more about generating power, resistance, voltage, amperes, batteries, fuses, motors, transformers, and more. Subscribe and hit that bell to get notified when the new video drops. If you can, share this video with someone who can appreciate it. Your support is what keeps me making these videos. Thanks to you and my patrons on Patreon, this channel is possible. Click to see another video or to subscribe. Sources in the description, and thank you for watching.
Alright, and so that's another thing. Folks, you find somebody out there, you find some people out there that are teaching people stuff that is really important, try to support them whatever way you possibly can. Support people for People Radio Network, because they're out there doing something wonderful. And if you like what Shaziz Radio is doing, try to support them. You know, simple, by passing podcasts around and information and bringing a friend here to Mad Science or the Knights of the Round Table or any other shows that we do, just bring them here. Say hi. You know, let them learn something. That's the best part. That's the best way to support any of what we're doing right here. It not only lets us know that, you know, people really appreciate what it is that we do, but it allows more people to benefit from our works. You know, there's a lot goes on behind the scenes of, you know, Mad Science. It's not just a guy getting on the radio mouthing off about, you know, how the mainstream science has dropped the ball and pretty much sold their soul to the devil, as far as I'm concerned, because we could be so much further. We're in the year 2019 and there's still people out there that can't even get a fresh drink of water, which is a darn shame, because we got the technology in order to be able to resolve that, you know. And what do we get? What do we get for all of our hard works and labors? We get people out there in the world still suffering, and it ain't right. It just isn't right. So, you know, if you like what we do here, please share the links. You know, And if you don't like what we're doing here, at least go out there and check out some of the other affiliated networks. Go out there and say hi to them. Because maybe we don't have everything that you need here, but between all of us together, we got every piece of the puzzle. There's some brilliant researchers out there. Stephen Gibbons, one of the most amazing people that's ever showed up in our chat room, took the time to put together a resource page. Stephen's resource page is amazing. You get on there, he has put link after link after link to alternative energy, everything that you can imagine. And he did it for you. He did it for all of us. And just click on that link. When you see the work that he accomplished on there, go there to the super chat room and tell him thank you. You know? Because he put the work down for you. You know, you don't have to go looking for it anymore. It's right there. Anon2704 in the chat room says, happy to see the return of real science. Me too, my friend. Me too. But here at the Shaziz Radio, Mad Science is the way. I mean, I tell you, I actually have made me a t-shirt, and I'm still waiting on it. Weather's been bad. I ain't got a chance to get down and get that t-shirt, but I'm going to show you what it looks like whenever I get it. That way, if you like, you make one on your side. You don't have to buy it from me or anything like that. Just take the idea, concept, and make it fit you. And but it says on there, on that t-shirt, it says that mad science is the key to free energy. Ask me why, and it has a link to the website. And so basically I'll be walking around with a walking billboard that says mad science on there, and ask them a question. So they come up here and ask me, hey, why is mad science the key to free energy? And that'll open up a dialogue that I can then start talking to them about, alternative energy deals and things that we've got in science and physics that can actually, solve the problems of the world. I'm going to post a link in the chat room to that t-shirt. The one I had made, I'm going to sit there and copy that. The one I made looks just like the one you see on there, but on the very front of it, I actually put Mad Science on the front of the t-shirt. So you'll get to see it in a video. But I'm going to post this link in over the chat rooms and everything. Take a look at that. And if you believe in Mad Science and what it is we're doing, get you a Sharpie out and write it on a t-shirt. Get some folks to come over here and take a peek at what it is we're talking about. Because my ultimate goal isn't to try to get rich or famous or anything like that. All I'm trying to do is get the dream team to gather in your communities and my communities and take everything that we've learned and put all these pieces of the puzzle together in order to resolve what they said was a problem. If we could only get that accomplished, folks. If we could only get that accomplished. We won't have to worry about people being sick and homeless and poor and not being able to have a decent meal, be warm, whatever. Draw that on a piece of paper. Draw it on on a bulletin board somewhere. Get people to come there and ask the question. What I asked, the question right there that's on that shirt, the question. I'm posting this over there on the Skype. I'm going to try to share it over there at People for People as well. Folks, help me to spread the message. That's all I ask. I put a lot of time and effort into trying to share every bit of what I've got with you for free. So all I ever ask in return is that if you like what you see here, just share it with somebody. Because just by them coming here, I know that my work isn't for nothing. That I'm doing something positive in the world. And that's all I want. I want to leave something better for my grandchildren and yours. I want to leave something better than what we've had to contend with. And if there happens to be any of the Knights of the Round Table out there that want to jump in here and finish off the last portion of the show, give me a call up, because be nice to wind down a little bit with a friend. But in the meantime, I'm going to take a quick music break and just play a couple tunes for a second. Catch my breath. But take a look at that shirt, folks. I got me one made up. It cost me, I don't know, about 20 some odd dollars. But it said mad science is the key. But mad science is the key to truth about free energy. Ask me why. That's all I want to do is ask them why. Have them ask me why. Why is it that I keep on saying what it is that I'm saying? And when I show you the neodymium magnet accelerator, in the way that it's supposed to have been designed to begin with, and you see what's going on there? I hope that that neodymium magnet accelerator is more than a little miniature generator or a miniature toy. I hope that that little neodymium magnet accelerator becomes a teaching tool for real science to come back to school. Real science. We're here in the year 2019, like I said. We should be so much further along than what we are right now. That's why I'm so passionate about what it is that I do here. I want the world to be a better place. I'm going to do the best I can to make it so. And if you want to help me, we'll get it done quicker. Peace and love, everybody. Stay tuned. You're listening to Mad Science.
Can you hear me? Give my creation life!
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Can you read?
I want to pause this for a second. And I want to make an offer out there to everybody. That shirt idea that I got going on, if you can turn that into a fundraiser for your network, not mine, for your network, because that, just by making those shirts and getting people that's interested in buying a shirt to raise money for, to get your network going, it will benefit me, because when you sell that shirt and you help to support your network to keep it online, then all that money goes to your network. But just by getting people to read that shirt and getting them to come talk to me, that would be the best thing in the world. So give it a little bit of thought. If you want to support Shazia's Radio, and you need to support your network as well financially, do this. Make the t-shirt, sell them, and use that funds to keep yourself on air, to keep benefiting the people that come to your show to see what it is and listen and share ideas with one another. And any other idea that I put on the table like that, the same thing. I'm not in this to make the money. All I want to do is get this message out to people. All I want to do is give the world what I promised. I told them I was going to study everything that there is to know about alternative energy. And when I get that done, I was going to share it with each and every one of the power company's customers for free. And I aim to do so. But it just dawned on me while listening to that song. If you can use anything on Shaziz Radio to support your network, you can help me inadvertently by supporting your network, by just having people show up and say hi. So, back to the music. Sorry for the interruption. Peace and love, everybody. You're listening to Mad Science.
Talking on the wind, you got to understand if we move. персональный спутник. don't lie.
Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends.
He's got a laptop, there it is. He's got a laptop.
name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, could you describe the ruckus, sir? Alright, well, the ruckus is mad science. I love mad science, but not as much as I love all the people that come around here to share mad science with me. Folks, I meant what I said during that one music break I cut in there on that song, and I told everybody, look, you know, if you want to make a some sort of campaign to raise some funds to help support your network, and you want to use that t-shirt idea or bumper sticker or a button, I don't care. I want you to make as much money as you can to support your network, to keep your network going. I don't want any proceeds from any fundraiser. I want those proceeds to go to you. That's what's going to make me happy, knowing that, you know, I was able to help contribute in keeping wonderful stations like People for People Radio Network online. And, you know, all these other different affiliated networks. If you see anything on the website that I've done, you think you could put some sort of fundraiser together with, and you put that together and collect all the revenues and keep them. Alright, how this benefits me, I'm not in this to make money. What I'm wanting to do is I'm wanting to get people to come to the table. I'm wanting to get people to come say hi. That's it. So, you made a t-shirt, and I wouldn't care if you made a million t-shirts and sold them for $1 billion. It don't matter to me. You know, I'm not looking for any financial reward out of this deal. What I'm saying, though, by you doing something like that and helping keep your network online, you help me at the same exact time because we help each other. It says mad science is the key to truth about free energy. Ask me why. Once they ask that question, why? Why is mad science the key to the truth about free energy? And it has a website address on the shirt. I got me one made. It cost me almost $30 because I only had one made. But either way, you know, it was worth it to me because I'm going to wear it in the, you know, in some videos and stuff and show people. And it actually says Mad Science on the front of the shirt. But either way, it's a way to open up a dialogue. And it's a way to show them that there's a place out there on the internet that's talking about exactly what it is that they're looking for, mad science. During the music break, Stephen Gibbons put in a massive, awesome link. I mean, I just love this thing. It's got all kinds of stuff about magnetism and stuff, magnetic-related information. And if we take and utilize this information that Stephen just threw on the table there, and it's just a few of the deals. One says magnetism and its effects on living things, magnetic blueprints of life, geometric coded magnets behave differently, magnetic fields of dreams, all kinds of. But if we study these magnets, I mean, really get down into looking at them microscopically, you know, picking apart what portion of mechanical things are going on in there, we can build some super efficient machines. But anyway, like I was saying before that, you make a t-shirt and you want to sell it on your site, and you know, I want you to ensure all the funds go to you, or all the funds go to somebody that you trust to be doing something good. You use that to support each other. You use that to support your networks. If you want to make bumper stickers or flyers or whatever, it don't matter. Mugs. I see how these YouTubers, they'll get together and they'll make all these different merchandises and they'll sell them to their subscribers and stuff like that. I'm not in all that stuff, you know. I made me one because I want to try to get the idea out there. Maybe people will write it on a t-shirt and then they'll come by and say hi to me and I can talk to them about science. That's where my reward would come out of. And that, knowing that somehow or another, you know, just something I was doing helped to benefit everybody else out there, and you use that to, you know, get people thinking and talking and working together. So if that's something that you'd be interested in, that's why I'm trying to tell you right now. That would make me happy as all get out, you know. And if it benefits you, then it benefits me. It's as simple as that, because we're all related. All of us are brothers and sisters as far as I'm concerned, and everything good that happens to you happens to me. Everything bad that happens to you happens to me. And so I think we should, you know, make a lot of good things happen to ourselves and everybody. Hold on, I think I got a phone call here. How you doing there, Ted? You're live good. On Mad Science for another 40 minutes, I think.
Hi. How's Mad Science going this morning?
It's going great, man. We're talking about magnetics and magnetisms and alternative energies and ways to support each other and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, you'll probably have to go back to listen to the podcast to get the full rundown, but the podcast will be up there as soon as we get done. Cool.
Y'all talking about Ed Lee Scalen today?
Who?
Ed Lee Scalen, the guy that built that coral castle?
No, he did some amazing things, but, you know, I don't want to take it on down. Huh?
On magnets?
What?
You ever read his book on magnets?
No, I haven't ever had the opportunity. I've seen a lot of videos about how he used magnetism to do a lot of work, and it's pretty amazing. That he would be a really good thing to look into if you're going that direction. But right now,
he has a book that is old book that he wrote that's a bunch of experiments on magnets, but they're kind of unconventional experiments. He teaches you how to use a magnet to shoot a beam of either positive or negative magnets in a straight line.
Well, I like that kind of unconventional stuff. If you look at what you just said, you just explained the doggone Hadron Collider, how they're able to guide the beams of particles around and collide them into each other so that they can study what happens when they do that. So
I like your accelerator you put on your YouTube channel. It looks cool.
Yeah, well, wait till you see the newer version. You're really going to like, if you like the one you saw prior, you're really going to love the newer version. And the newer version, if you listen to my show today and hear what it is that I said about that thing, you're going to like what I said about it, and you're going to like how that not only will become a nice little teaching tool, but it has a lot of really cool things that come along with it.
Awesome.
So, that's why it is that I do what I do, brother. Because I want to make sure that everybody out there is taken care of. We help each other. So, the best thing that people can do to support this radio network isn't to send me money. I'm not looking for you to send me money. I'm looking for you to send me people and brilliant minds. It's the people that are the true gold out there. That's what... Look, you can have a billion tons of gold in your pocket. Your pants are probably going to fall down. But what are you going to get done? First you got to figure out how to get all that gold out of your pocket and pull your pants up and get to work.
Nice.
But people are ready. You know, they're ready to expand their minds. They're ready to utilize their talents. And if we can get the right dream teams together in every single community, we've got it made. We can resolve all of this. That's what I've been trying to say to everybody. People are the true gold. Each one of you out there listening in are the true gold. You know? Forget all the fame and fortune and riches and all the troubles and trials and tribulations that come along with all that. I'm not looking to get famous. I'm not looking to get rich. I'm looking to get things done. And to get things done, I need some partners. I need some friends and some family members to come together. And it's like they do whenever they build a barn, you know. We all get together. I bring some hammers and you bring some nails and somebody brings some wood and somebody brings some food and somebody else brings some music and we all work together and enjoy ourselves and we build a home or we build a barn. See what I mean? That's what it's all about.
I believe everybody's soul can shine gold if they let it.
Yep.
That's the real, you know, the real alchemy, you know what I mean?
Well, I'm glad you called in because I kind of needed a breather, kind of needed a second voice out in here. And, you know, Edlid Scanlon did some pretty amazing things. Just that door that he built together that's so balanced that, you know, you can open it up, a real heavy door that you can just open up with your fingers, you know. That's pretty amazing stuff. But it's the unconventional science guys that we need at the table. And we could actually use some of the modern day science guys to translate what it is that we're trying to say to the world. You see what I'm saying? Because every single, whether it's science or any kind of medical or anything like that, you try to sit there and talk in the way that you and I are talking to each other, these folks, they don't understand what it is we're saying. And for that, they think we're wrong. But I don't believe any of us are wrong. I believe all of us have talents. All of us have insight. All of us have, knowledge and gifts to bring to the table. And maybe your words aren't explaining to me exactly like I need to hear them in order to get things done. But if we can ever get past that one barrier right there, between your piece of the puzzle and my piece of the puzzle, doesn't that make the picture bigger?
Sounds like it would.
Well, yeah, if you got a 500-piece puzzle and it all land all apart on the floor, you got a mess. But you take the time to put them together, usually puzzles have pretty nice pictures on them. See what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, if it was supposed to be done alone, it would already been done. Supposed to be done together.
That's the key. If I was able to sort all this out, people might think I was God. I don't want to be God. That'd be too much work. Trying to run around and fix everything, man. How many things are broken in this world that need fixed? If I had a magic wand, it'd be done.
The faith of a mustard seed.
Yep. Well, I'm doing what I can with what I got to work with. And hopefully I can inspire other people to do the same. Because if we get this wave of love and knowledge rolling across the globe, and everybody looks out and say, hey, you know what? This world ain't nearly as bad as it looks. We can clean this up. We can fix this thing. That's what I believe. What do you think?
Me?
Yeah, you.
I love it. Just speaking of the choir, I've been trying to bring people together and work on things together for a while now. It seems to be working out.
Well, that's good. You seeing any good results?
Yeah, there's actually a lot of people selling, quote-unquote, free energy machines now. And, they're not being blackballed. They're making quite a few sales. If you look at some of their interviews, they say, most of my sales goes to, Eastern Europe and Australia.
Yeah.
Not too many sales in the United States. Well, look around, and not too many people here care. In Australia, electricity bills are huge. I got a couple buddies in Australia.
Their major
concern is energy bills. Here in the United States, I got my $90 power bill, so what? And over there, it's a big portion of their income goes to power bills, so I can see why there is more of a draw for people to want them. It's a necessity is the mother of invention, and in the United States, we don't have the necessity. We don't feel we do. And then, I live in West Virginia, where we've seen power disruptions before for months, and, that sucks.
Yeah.
People actually are dying at that point.
Well, I'm still on the power grid, and I said I'll go off the power grid when I take everybody else off the power grid with me, because when I go off the power grid, I'm going to do it with style. I'm going to do it with some class.
Well, I can text you every once in a while to see when you go.
Well, these new deals that I'm sharing with everybody, the accelerator and the two-signal generator that I'm going to be pushing out here pretty quick. When you see this thing, it's not only going to look good, it's going to do just what I said it's going to do. But those are the ones to watch out for. Keep an eye on those videos right there. I ain't never, ever in the history of all the time I've done YouTube, of course, I don't make the greatest videos in the world, but some of the information in there is like gold, Knowledge is power as far as I'm concerned, but I ain't never one time ever had a single video ever go viral. I got a feeling that one of these two videos, whether it be the neodymium magnet accelerator or the dual signal generator, is going to go viral. And I could be wrong. It might not. Because I've had some really, what I thought were really good videos, they didn't go anywhere. Or maybe only a couple hundred views on there. Now, I intentionally put a lot of crazy stuff on my YouTube channel. That's because I wanted to survive long enough to get some information out there so that everyone will understand it before they see it. You see what I'm saying? And I don't want to be like, you know, some of the other alternative energy guys that put some really powerful information out there that they put all their cards on the table, and the next thing you know, they had health issues and disappeared, if you understand what I'm trying to say here. It's going to be counterproductive to me to get whacked before I can actually get doggone information on the table. But the way it stands, I've been putting the information on the table all along. I've been drawing the schematics, even in my crazy videos, and I've been asking the questions to, if you look at my description on my videos, you'll see a question mark down there. It'll ask a question, or in the title will ask a question. Is this possible? What do you think? That's what I want. I want to get their minds to moving. I want their gears in their heads to start turning and the light bulbs to come on, because the moment I drop this information on the table, they're going to already know what it is that I'm talking about. And there ain't no way to put the information back in the box, if you understand what I'm saying. Because it's already out there. Every bit of what I'm talking about now, every bit of what I'm getting ready to share with everybody, it is already on the table. It's just that you got to take those pieces of the puzzle and put them together. And I want to put them together in one nifty little package, so that whenever I debut the next neodymium magnet accelerator, it sparks off some real serious people talking. Hey, look at that. You see what that thing's doing? Doesn't it look ironic that that neodymium magnet accelerator mimics what on the atomic level the atom is supposedly doing according to the description of science? Think about it. And you can see it. You can see what's going on. You see what I'm saying, Ted?
Well, I think I see what you're saying. You're going to pull electrons off of it.
Brother, you're looking at a model of what science says. That the proton and the neutron and the electron that makes up the atom is all about. Not only does it do what it does on a microscopic scale, whatever that is, that's why we're talking about magnetism today. Because if we take and we focus our research into what actually is going on in a permanent magnet as it's sitting there on the table and it's constantly keeping a magnetic field, there's energy involved in that deal. There's something going on a tiny level that if we can understand that on a tiny level and scale that up to a visual model where you can now study magnetism to the extent where now you can see what is actually happening, what's causing this thing that we call electricity. You can see the water flowing, so to speak. You can understand that you can jump on that water in a boat and you can ride downstream and all that kind of stuff. There's forces, there's pressure, there's attraction going on. And inside that neodymium magnet accelerator is basically what you see. When you look at that doggone thing sitting on the table, you're able to look on the microscopic scale of what science just told you the electron theory was all about. Now do you see what I'm saying?
You got what I think about it. I mean, I think I believe you'd be showing how to pull electrons off the atom.
Yeah, we're moving them. We're moving them everywhere. That's all we're doing. That's all we're doing. That's all we've ever been doing, is we're moving electrons from point A to point B, and we're using the voltage pressure to get work done. But in order to understand that, you have to be able to see it. They say seeing is believing. You have to be able to see the effect so that you can understand what's actually occurring. If you can scale it up, you can scale it down, vice versa. And if you take all the mechanics and all the physics and all the basic science that makes up what we have as our knowledge base as far as electricity, electronics, machinery, plumbing, whatever, all of these forces of nature, they've already showed us how to do things that we want. When you want to talk about current flowing, you talk about getting on a boat going down a river, depending on how fast that river is going down there, depends on how exciting of a ride you're going to have. If there's any bumps on the way, that's the resistance that the water's having as the current's flowing by. The same exact concepts apply with electricity. You see the same exact things in nature. Nature will mimic itself in all the different ways that it does what it is that it does, including heat. It doesn't matter. Heat, air pressure, steam pressure, voltage pressure, all the different forces of nature that you witness on a daily basis can be turned into mechanical work to get things done. We know how to heat things up and we know how to cool things down because of what nature's already shown us. I'm just trying to put it into the simplest fashion that every single person on the planet can understand. All the high-tech terminology out there in the world isn't going to do nothing to fix the world if people don't understand what it is that's going on. If you can look at it, you can see that if you put a sail on a boat, you can let the wind push you across. You don't have to paddle anymore. We figured that out. We figured that out by watching what nature's done. So, when you want to try to teach people about electricity, when you want them to understand the electron theory in the way that it's described by science, then you need to make some sort of visual effect that will show them exactly what's going on. You visualize that neodymium magnet as the actual electron itself. You see what I'm saying? Now, the electron, as it's passing through that magnetic field and it's spinning around and it's trying to sort itself out, it's trying... What the heck is that noise, for Pete's sake? You don't hear that?
Roger, it sounds like...
Wow! That's pretty cool. I know what just happened. Huh! The circuit that I got, the one I keep talking about, that's in the background that I do on my Twitch, it has built-in systems that pick up different energies out of the air. Like, it'll actually pick up ambient light, and it will use the solar panels to charge up that capacitor. Well, it just did that. Because I shorted it out before the show, because obviously I didn't want to hear that wheeing going on in the background. But it developed enough energy while this doggone radio show's going and while everything's happening around me to basically start the circuit up again. So that's what I was hearing in the background. But anyway, back to the electron. Alright. If you visualize that neodymium magnet as the actual electron going around the nucleus of the atom, around the proton and the neutron and all that, and you visualize it spinning around as that thing is trying to right itself in that field as it's going around crazily around it, producing that shell of the the atom or whatever, then it's producing a magnetic field. And when these things interact with each other, they try to align themselves. Well, while this neodymium magnet's spinning around in a circle, it's doing exactly what science just said that was going on a small scale, but it's doing it on a larger scale with a stronger magnetic field, and it's actually taking those lines of flux, and they're whipping around there, and they're crossing through the same wire where the energy's coming in, so every time that magnetic field changes from north to south, it induces a current inside that doggone copper wire. The same energy that's coming down, now the lens effect starts kicking back on it. It's trying to balance that field out, and so it does that in the form of current that it tries to push back in the opposite direction, which causes the circuitry in the neodymium magnet accelerator to begin to get hot. And if you don't shut it down in a certain period of time or guide that energy away from it, it will start a wire fire and it'll melt right through the deal because it's getting meeting too much resistance because it's producing too much current to continue to do what it's doing. You understand what I just said?
Yeah, I do.
It's amazing. But that's what's going on. Right now, whenever it gets to the point where it starts pushing back current, it is the equivalents of argon, neon, halogen, xenon, helium, or any of the noble gases that are just now getting ready to go into the plasma state because they're so energized, there's nowhere for the energy to go, so it starts to ionize all that gas inside there and turn it into the fourth state of matter being plasma. So when that thing starts backing up like that, it's the equivalent of what's going on when you shoot high voltage in through any of the noble gases and energize them into the fourth state of matter being plasma. So what you're seeing right there, and what the doggone Hadron Collider and all them have in common, is the fact that electricity and magnetism are one and the same, and what we call magnetism or electricity might not be exactly what science says. But we use the electron theory in order to explain how it is that we believe it's functioning. That's the best that we've got right now because nobody has ever seen the actual electron. Nobody's ever seen clearly the atom itself. You know, it's fuzzy. It's not like you can get down there in a mechanical view and see it. So if I bring it up, I scale it up from a microscopic all the way up to something that you can set on your table, it will show you the electron theory right there in front of your face, and you can explain to people scientifically because they can see inside the thing, they can see outside the thing, they can see all the actions and interactions and reactions from the deal. They can see physically what would actually be going on in the electron if the electron theory was true. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I've heard people explain electron theory before and talking about how, you know, misconception of electrons actually moving through or necessarily around the wire to necessarily get you your electricity. And then you have your resistance backed up because when you try to actually force electrons down the wire, they get hot or there's heat or something like that. So the way I look at it is that, you know, the energy of the electron transfers to the next electron down the way and they carry the message more than actually moving the individual electron from point A to point B. It's actually exciting the electron A, starts exciting electron B, starts exciting electron C down the chain. And they do move depending on how excited they are, but that's kind of the way I understand electron theory.
Well, in their neutral state, while they're just sitting there idly by or spinning around in their own little orbit or whatever, in their neutral state, there's no electric flow. It's just there, everything's balanced out. It's just kind of sitting there hovering. But when you start to interact with it, whether you tilt it just a little bit, when those two fields get in general proximity of each other, just like two separate magnets on a table, when they're far enough apart, they're not going to interact. They're just kind of sitting there, you know, vibrating and doing whatever it is they normally do when they're balanced out. It's at zero right now, but the moment you push one or two towards each other, they will interact and those two fields will couple and become stronger until the point where they will actually attract to each other and align themselves to their perspective north or south. So you may be right that the electron may not actually be moving like we think it is. I mean, because if it's actually in orbit with an atom, it may not be actually exchanging electrons like we think it's doing. But by interacting more extra electrons that are trying to get in or bump some out or whatever, that's where we get our electricity. There's where we get our flow. So it might be an introduction of an electron at the start of the wire that bounces all the way down the wire because they're like, no, you get out of here, we're already full all the way down the line and you got this current flowing. And the more of these you have flowing down the same exact line, the stronger that field becomes.
So yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the process of exciting the electron field actually generated more ambient electrons from hydrogen that's ambient in the atmosphere.
Well, and that's another thing. Water, and there's because of hydrogen and oxygen and the way that they interact with each other, we may very well not be talking about the same exact thing that what we think is electricity. might be this interaction that we call magnetism or we call electricity. It could be seriously water molecules on a micro level that are interacting with each other, because every time you connect or you combine or disconnect a hydrogen atom and a oxygen atom, they release an electrical charge. They release energy. And when they recombine, same thing. So there are actual cells out there, hydrogen cells, that use that combination and recombination when the water molecule, which is the most stable molecule, it doesn't want to be separated. When it finally...
Right. I wouldn't necessarily feel that there's exactly a finite amount of electrons that are being pushed and pulled and shared between a finite amount of atoms sitting in like an equation. I view it more as, you know, the hydrogen has the potential to pull in any necessary electrons to fill the void in the equation. You see what I mean?
Yeah. No, all we're doing is basically either we're balancing nature out or we're throwing it off balance by, you know, the electron is the best way we got to explain it. But it might be we're putting more pressure, whether it be magnetic pressure or electrical pressure.
The electron, I feel like, is just like the balance. It just helps keep everything bound. It moves around to make sure that matter doesn't fall apart.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But science thinks that it has to get all the way down into the quantum physics realm in order to try to explain, but in the process of their explanation, just continue to muddy up the water. What I'm trying
to
do...
Well, it would be cool if they could figure out this level before they really got down to the quantum level.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But what I'm trying to do is put it in simplicity, using everything that science said is going on, putting it on the table so that you can physically see what's going on. And you can use all those gears, all those pieces of the puzzle to make a really super efficient generator. Because you know the cause and effect of them. You know what's going to cause heat and what isn't going to cause heat. We already got all that figured out. Now, what's actually on a microscopic level, a nano level, or even into the quantum realm that need to be discovered, that's going to be for the future, and that'll be for all the cool tools and toys we come out of by going into this research the way that I'm talking about, and excelling with it and taking these concepts and running with them. We can scale things up to we can visually see what's happening. Then we know what materials work best with whatever, and we can actually build super efficient generators. And every material after that point becomes a superconductor when you understand how to send that energy down the line. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Because right now, we're shoving energy down there. We don't need to be shoving it down there. We need to be pushing it through there if we want the work done. We already know what does the work.
I mean, it's just like the process of logging a mountain. Like, you can do it by hand, just get up in there and log a mountain, or you can send all the machinery and all the power up there to log the mountain, and it's like, either way, it's gonna get logged. I kind of view it as what you've always been saying, is that we're just trying to use too much to do a job that could be done with less.
Yep, that's it. We could be doing it so much more efficiently with a lot less power. Once we understand energy, what's actually going on, that's what my job is, to put it down to the simple. Because all the high-tech terminology and equations and mathematics and quantum physics, all that does is confuse it anymore and puts more questions on the table. Well, if this causes this, what causes that? So on down the line.
You study that Victor Schauberg or some, right?
Yeah, I know of him, but, you know, I got so much information inside my brain, yeah. It's just like...
Well, he was that logger from Germany back in the day that taught people how to log the old Black Forest Mountain, or Black Forest, you know, in Germany, and he kind of regretted that because he didn't have any conceptualization as being a fifth generation logger back in the 1800s, that, like, once he taught people how to log, like, using the log flume and things of that nature, how to move the logs out, he didn't know that they would go and, like, cut every one of them down. You know, because in his family, five generations deep, it was more about, like, managing the forest, cutting down what you knew needed to be cut down, rather than just cutting it all down because you could.
Yeah.
Well, and right there, it kind of shows that Victor was, all of his technology is like really highly efficient, and it goes all the way down, like, you know, some of his last inventions was working with the Germans on like the engines for like their aircraft alleged flying disc technology and things like that, because he had created an engine that like rotated on itself, you know, kind of similar to Dr. Searle's motor thing, but definitely different. But it's like it was about the rotation of it all and how efficient it was. And the Schauberger engine still would be today, if somebody built one, would be highly efficient. And it's like, you know, it's amazing how like some people just view things as like, let's do this efficiently, and other people view things as like, well, let's do whatever it takes to get this done as quickly as possible, even if we have to use 10 times the resources, let's just get this done.
Yeah, well, I'm not like that. I want to make sure that not only does this information benefit, but it continues into the future. You know, when you like start the first domino tipping and the light bulbs start coming on and people start realizing, wait a second, I can save a lot of money by using this knowledge, or I can save a lot of electricity. They said that we got to reduce our carbon footprint, all right? And you know how I don't feel, you know, I believe in all that. No, I'm not a global warming. I'm sitting here freezing and they're talking about global warming. Of course, now they call it climate change or climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week when the math doesn't add up. That's neither here nor there. What I'm saying is that right now, if you understood what today's show is all about, which I asked the question, are magnets proof of free energy? And I pretty much, my answer to it would be, yeah, 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt. But if you understand the mechanics of what I said today, we can quite literally use everything from sound waves to pressure waves to all kinds of different types of energy to move molecules around. Quite literally, you could write a song in the right frequency that would keep you warm just using the acoustic wave that's coming through there that is interacting with the water molecules in your body because of the way that that wave is transmitted through the air.
That's interesting, because I've been looking into this gentleman, Wim Hof, and he's the space, call him the Iceman. He was on Discovery Channel and stuff for running around in the Arctic in his boxers barefoot and swimming in the Arctic Channel and things like that. And he's taught people how to do his technique of basically not getting cold, staying warm, you know, even though he's half naked in the Arctic. And it's basically breathing. It's a breathing technique, the Wim Hof method. And you breathe and it gets your blood and your oxygen, your lung like pumps everything, and it creates exactly what you're saying, just in a different way. Yeah. You know, not even, you're creating that song with your breath and your blood. And since he's, you know, he was kind of called a scam artist for a while and a fraud, but since he's been doing it for so long and he's had so many doctors poking and prodding him, they've realized that when he's doing this breathing method, it actually is hyperoxygenating his blood. It fills his blood with oxygen, and it also makes his body go basic. The chemistry of just that song he's singing with his breath causes that to happen. And
well,
like,
there you go, brother.
You and me with that hyperoxygenation and the oxygen chamber therapy. If you can achieve that just from sitting around for 10 minutes in your room breathing for a few minutes, that's a blessing to a lot of people.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
what I'm saying? Could it be that efficient that we necessarily don't even need necessarily a hyperbaric oxygen chamber to hyperbaric to fill our blood with oxygen, and that just using our lungs, one of the biggest, you know, organ, it's, you know, obviously the skin is a huge organ, but it's a very large organ itself, and it has a purpose. And I think if we study it and use it correctly, you know, it could be a very efficient way of doing things like that, staying warm and having oxygen in your blood.
I agree. And we gotta start getting ready to get up out of here. But before all that, look, what you just talked about, that's what I'm striving for. We gotta start off at the basic realm, and we gotta work our way out and up and continue to excel in our knowledge as far as how we're understanding what nature's already doing. I already see it. I know it's on its way. All right. It's just we got to get some motivation going. We got to get people motivated. And so with that said, after this show right here is going to be two shows. One of them is going to be Music with Kara Hour, and next one in line going to be the Hope Show with Beverly. And so I hope everybody who's listening right now stays tuned. If you're into music and different types of music, you'll want to listen to Kara. And if you're into a spiritual journey, guidance with, you know, from somebody's own personal spiritual journey and perspective on things, and just, you know, basically people sharing their lives with each other, you know. Look, it's all about hope. It's all about peace and love as far as I'm concerned. And that's, I want to hear everybody's perspective of what they believe is going on in this world and what we can do to make it better. So with that said, I hope everybody stays tuned for these next two shows. So before we get up out of here, I asked the question, are magnets proof of free energy? You think about that question. Study up those links that Stephen posted, and keep an eye out for the new version of the neodymium magnet accelerator and this new, I call it a dual signal generator. And if you listen to this show, come back and listen to it later after seeing those, it should make a lot more sense to you than maybe my ramblings at the moment. But there's a method behind my madness, folks. It really is. So with that said, I got to start winding this show down. So I'm going to throw a tune on here because I got to get ready and geared up for Kara. And I want to make sure everybody gets a chance to hear that. So I'm going to throw a quick tune on here and start organizing everything. And I'll have to catch up with you later, Ted. So...
Sounds good, brother. Sounds good.
You got any quick message you want to throw out there before we bail up out of here?
Nah, I just appreciate you, man. Keep on keeping on. Much love.
All right. Everybody, you've been listening to Mad Science. Peace and love. Take care.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold grind. Is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. Good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out, and you can't make us run. Those wooden mold boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. Came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life.
I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.